So let's review what we did last time real quick. So we did this lightning review of the path integral formulation of quantum mechanics. So if I have some particle that's moving in a potential v of x, and it starts at some point xi at time equals negative t over 2, and ends up at xf at time t over 2, then there's this Euclidean formulation of the path integral, which you'll recall was useful for reading off the ground state wave function and energy. And we evaluate this propagator, which tells us how to go from xi to xf in this total time big T, this total Euclidean time big T. And that was a normalization factor times the integral over all paths times the exponential of negative Euclidean action over h bar, where you'll recall the Euclidean action was the same as the Lorentzian one, but instead of minus v, it's got plus v. And so the classical path, of course, is obtained by looking at the equation of motion for a particle of unit mass in one dimension. So that's the standard thing. But again, v has gone to minus v, so that's a little bit different from the Lorentzian case. And then we argued that we could basically define this measure in the path integral by saying that any function x of tau, remember, is this Euclidean time, is the classical path plus some sum of a complete set of functions times coefficient cn. So these cn's are constant, and that's some complete set of functions, where they're defined so that at these endpoints, the value of each of these xn is 0, okay? And they're orthogonal. So if I take xn, xm, and I integrate it over this integral, I just get a delta function that sets n equal to m, okay? So with those tools, we were able to write the measure for the path integral. So again, we have this propagator between xi and xf, and this was n times the integral over all possible values for these coefficients, where we've introduced some normalization with respect to h bar, okay, because the sort of difference between paths that we're interested in is going to be of order h bar, so we should measure the size of these coefficients in units of h bar, times e to the minus Euclidean action over h bar. Okay. So this is the formal expression. And what we can do is, in this path integral, we can basically do a Taylor expansion around the classical path. So we want to Taylor expand x bar, x, s, about s evaluated at the classical path, okay? So let's define this sum over n cn xn for the moment as delta x, okay? So this is going to be the thing that we're allowing to vary, and we'll assume that delta x is small by some measure, okay? So then this Taylor expansion, so we've got S Euclidean of x bar plus delta x, we can approximate this as our integral from negative t over 2 to t over 2 times the Lagrangian evaluated just at x bar d tau. Okay, so this is the action, not the path integral. The action is defined over there. The Lagrangian is just 1/2 dx d tau squared plus v. Okay, so we have the Lagrangian evaluated at the classical path d tau. And then we've got the first order term in a Taylor expansion, which is going to be dl dx evaluated at x bar times delta x plus dl dx bar evaluated at x bar delta x dot, where dot is dx d tau, nothing more than that. Okay, so this is the zeroth order term. This is the first order term. And then we've got a second order term that we can write again, which is just this Taylor expansion. I've got the second derivative of the Lagrangian with respect to x evaluated at x bar, delta x squared. I've got the mixed derivative evaluated x bar and x bar dot times delta x dot. And then finally, I've got the second derivative with respect to x dot evaluated at x bar dot, delta x dot squared, d tau. And if we were really ambitious, we could write down the third order and fourth order and whatever, and we'd be here all day, but we're just going to go up to second order because that's what we'll need. Okay, so we've got the zeroth, first, and second order pieces, and now let's try and evaluate these and see what we get. Okay, so the first order piece is straightforward. I just find the classical solution, I stick it into the Lagrangian, and I integrate over t, and I get what I get. That's just some number. So what about the first order piece? So the first order piece, well, the derivative of the Lagrangian with respect to x is just v evaluated at x bar. So here we get negative t over 2 to t over 2 times v prime. Prime is going to denote dv dx. So we've got v prime delta x plus the derivative of the Lagrangian with respect to x dot, which is just x dot bar, delta x dot d tau. And here, we can integrate by parts on this term to turn it into a second derivative, right? And then we can use the equation of motion to determine what this is. So this, if we integrate by parts, we'll just turn into v prime delta x minus x double dot delta x d tau. And so I have negative x double dot plus v prime. And that, you'll notice, is just the equation of motion for the classical path. So if this is evaluated for x bar, which it is, I'll just stick that in explicitly, then this is going to vanish. So the first order term vanishes. We can also evaluate the second order term. So the second order term, I've got this second derivative of the Lagrangian with respect to x. That's just going to be the second derivative of v with respect to x. So we're going to get this integral from negative t over 2 to t over 2. V double prime, and then I've got delta x squared there. The mixed term with my assumption for the Lagrangian is 0, right? Because I'm only going to have x dot in the kinetic term and x in the potential term, so that's zero. And the second derivative of the Lagrangian with respect to x dot is just going to be 1. So for that term, I just get plus delta x dot squared d tau. And so again, we can integrate by parts to simplify this expression. So if we integrate by parts on the second term, I can turn that into a second derivative with respect to tau times delta x. So we can rewrite this as v double prime evaluated at x bar times delta x, we'll keep one factor, minus delta x double dot all times delta x d tau. Okay? So this is the second order piece. And now we can look at this. And if I make a further definition, so if I define if I look at all the xn's that make up this delta x, remember delta x was this sum cn xn, if I define these xn so that they are eigenfunctions of this equation of motion, so xn are actually eigenfunctions of this equation of motion with eigenvalue lambda n, then I can evaluate this this second order piece. Okay. So we can just take this. This is that equation of motion, right? And I can substitute in lambda n xn effectively, where I'm summing over all the possibilities. So this second order piece becomes this integral from negative t over 2 to t over 2 of a sum over n lambda n cn xn. This whole guy becomes that. And then I've got delta x, which is a sum over some integer. This is just a dummy index times cm xm, all integrated over d tau. Okay. And now I can use the orthogonality property of these xnm to evaluate this. Okay. So this, if I pull out these sums, so I've got a bunch of constants. The eigenvalues, lambda n, are constant. The cn and cm are constant. And I've got this integral from negative t over 2 to t over 2, xn xm d tau, which is just delta nm. So that this second order piece, and I've dropped a factor of a half, is just going to equal a sum over one of these indices. We'll say, we'll pick n. Sum over n lambda n cn squared over 2. So, sorry that? Is there a big T? No, there is no big T, because we did this integral and it basically just gave us the delta function. Yeah. Okay. All right, so If there are no further questions, let me show you why this is useful. It's useful because if I substitute this now back into the path integral, I just get a product of Gaussians. And Gaussians are really easy to integrate. So we can perform this integral. So if again I look at this propagator, where I've used this expansion of the action to second order and substituted back in, this is equal to this normalization factor. Times the zeroth order piece, that was just S evaluated at X bar. And then I've got this integral from how I defined the measure for my path integral. So I've got that factor from up there. And then I've got this exponential of the second order piece, right? So that's just e to the minus 1 over 2 h bar, sum over n lambda n cn squared. And I'm integrating cn, so this is really just a product of Gaussians. And we can do that integral. So this integral is some normalization times a product of lambda n to the minus 1/2. That came because the integral of a Gaussian is square root 1 over 2 pi times the variance. And that's related to lambda n times e to the minus s evaluated at x bar over h bar. Okay. So this mostly was a result of a few definitions, a few nice choices, right? So we chose to expand our classical path as a sum of the, we chose to parameterize any path by the sum of the classical path and this set of orthogonal functions, which further we defined to be eigenfunctions of that equation up there, which you can now see. And in making that definition, we've basically boiled down the evaluation of this path integral into solving that eigenvalue problem. Okay? With this definition, I can totally parameterize this factor here as the solution to that eigenvalue problem. Okay, so a simple example of how this is used. Is the simple harmonic oscillator. So if I have a simple harmonic oscillator, it's just V, of course, is 1/2, call it that, omega squared x squared. And this, for the purposes of the Euclidean path integral, is negative v, right? So it's some upside down hill. And I can calculate the ground state energy of the harmonic oscillator by looking for the propagator that takes me from the top back to the top. So the propagator just to sit there, effectively. So I can evaluate, let's put the top of the hill at x equals 0. I can evaluate the propagator from x equals 0 back to x equals 0. So the classical path is easy. It's just I sit there. Okay. So the classical path has 0 kinetic energy for all times and 0 potential energy for all times, by definition, because I chose to put the top of the hill at zero energy. Okay. So x bar equals 0 for all time. So that means I can evaluate the action for this classical path. That 0, the action is that's easy. The action is just 0. So I get a factor of 1. And that means that this is just this product, well, it's some prefactor times the product n of lambda n to the minus 1/2. So I just need to solve the eigenvalue problem. Unfortunately, I don't have time to solve the eigenvalue problem for you, so I'll quote the answer. But there's a really nice discussion of how to do this in the book by Feynman and Hibbs. For our purposes, we'll just quote the answer, and if you're interested, you could come talk to me, or you could look it up and see how this is done. But this problem, basically, I get omega, where omega is defined as the second derivative of the potential at the top of the hill, over pi h bar to the 1/2 e to the minus omega t over 2. So if you recall, in the limit of large t, this is just equal to e to the minus the ground state energy times t over h bar. Times the overlap of the ground state wave function with position 0. So now I can just compare the left and right hand side. Okay, and I'll see that the ground state energy of the harmonic oscillator is equal to 1/2 h bar omega. That should look familiar. And this overlap is equal to omega over pi h bar to the 1/2. Okay, which also, if you evaluate the wave function for the harmonic oscillator and you ask what its amplitude squared is at 0, that's what you'll get. So so that's the simple example for how this would work for the simple harmonic oscillator. Again, you can see the utility of this is that this method allows you to directly read off the ground state energy by just taking this limit as big T goes to infinity and looking at the leading piece. Okay, so before we march on, are there any questions?
I was just wondering, this is a one-dimensional problem, right? So how can what is the non-classical part? So you start at 0, because if you go like this, it's like we will go, and this will cost a lot of energy to go back.
So here, we can imagine all sorts of non-classical paths. So if I had more kinetic energy than was specified by some constant fixed energy, then I would be on a non-classical path. So I can have a different mix of kinetic and potential energy. And I need to take into account all those possible mixes when I evaluate the path integral. So we're going to do now the unstable particle, which is going to have a manifestly non-classical path. And then we can see how that works. But here the point is that there is just one classical path, which is defined by a precise relationship between the kinetic and potential energies. Any other questions? Okay. Okay, so now let's put this formalism to work to answer the question that we originally set out to answer, which is how do I deal with theories that have metastable states? Remember, we wanted to figure out how to boil the universe. So what if I had, instead of the simple harmonic oscillator, some potential that looked like this? Okay. So here I have some position, we'll call it XF, where I have a minimum. Okay. And then something else happens over here. We don't really care what it is, just to note that over here there are free particle states. So here I have some free particle states, and there's a continuum of such free particle states if I go arbitrarily far away. Well, here, we could always expand around the ground state and define approximate energy levels just like we were in a harmonic oscillator potential, right? However, because there is a continuum on this side, we know that these discrete eigenfunctions can't really be eigenfunctions of the full Hamiltonian. So we could find approximate eigenstates and approximate eigenvalues, but those are not going to be the true eigenstates and true eigenvalues of this full potential. The reason is, of course, that this wave function, no matter how we define it, is going to have overlap with some of these free particle states. So that effectively means that there's going to be some quantum tunneling between a particle that I start localized here to these free particle states. So again, we're going to use this trick of Euclidean time and take v to minus v so that instead I get something like this. So now to come back to your question, here there are manifestly non-classical paths that take you through this barrier. And this Euclidean time formalism is useful because it tells you about these classical paths in the potential minus v. Okay. And those are paths which can connect a state, say, at xf, and a state here, we'll call it x star. Okay. So it tells you how to connect the well to the continuum states. So in particular, what we want to do is we want to ask again for the correction to the ground state energy, just like we did for the harmonic oscillator. Actually, it's not just like for the harmonic oscillator, I lied. We want to find the correction to the ground state energy on top of that for the harmonic oscillator. So there's a minimum. And of course, the first guess you'd make for the ground state energy is just 1/2 h bar omega. So E naught, the ground state energy, is going to be 1/2 h bar omega plus some correction. Okay. And now we're going to set out to compute, well, both we're going to get both pieces. We're going to get the 1/2 h bar omega, and we're going to get the correction to the ground state energy using the same formalism. Okay. And again, this won't be an eigenstate. And the way that we're going to see this is that delta E is going to be imaginary. So the correction to the ground state energy is going to be an imaginary number. So So that's okay though. All that implies is that this ground state is unstable. I haven't really found a solution to the eigenvalue problem. This is in fact an unstable state. And I can relate the imaginary part of E naught to the decay width over 2. Okay, where the lifetime, I've used tau already, tau L is just 1 over gamma. Okay. So this, if you remember from your particle physics class, it's just like having an unstable particle. There's an imaginary term in the propagator, and that tells you something about the lifetime of that particle. Same thing here. Okay, so we're going to do this again by looking at the propagator and taking big T goes to infinity and reading off the ground state energy. So I'll just mention really briefly what the sort of naive picture is. The naive picture is I start localized around this well, and then if I wait a time of order the lifetime, I'll expect to find the particle over here. Okay. So there is this sort of, well, it doesn't really happen exactly that way. If we were talking about wave functions and observations and things like that, we'd need to be a little bit more detailed. But the sort of naive picture is that I start with a measurement that localizes the particle here, and if I perform a measurement at a later time, after the lifetime, there's appreciable probability that I'll find the particle on the other side of the well. Hence quantum tunneling. Okay. So first, following the recipe, we need to find X bar, okay, the classical path. So that means I need to tell you about some boundary conditions. What we want to find is the propagator from, again, XF back to XF. This is equivalent to the harmonic oscillator example where I found the amplitude to just sit on top of the hill. Here we're doing basically the same thing. Okay. And so we have our equation for X bar. Which is just that, with the boundary conditions that X bar at plus or minus T over 2 equals XF. That came from our specification of the amplitude we were interested in computing. Okay. So one can solve this, and you can see the sort of paths that might be allowed. So I could just sit here forever. Okay, that'll basically give me the contribution from the harmonic oscillator. Or I could travel to the other side and then come back. Okay, that's also an allowed path. And that path, actually it deserves its own board. So this sort of path, if I was going to plot it as a function of x and tau, there's some position x star on the other side of the barrier, and then xf. And this solution is going to do something like this. So it's going to go to the other side of the barrier. It's going to start at XF, go to the other side of the barrier, and then come back. And for that reason, it is given the clever name called a bounce, because it goes to one side and it bounces back. Okay. This type of solution is also known as an instanton. Because if I take the limit of large t, this thing looks like I sit here, I sit here, I sit here, boom, boom, and then I sit here, I sit here, I sit here. So it happens in an instant. Okay, so that's just terminology that has no other meaning besides terminology. These are the types of solutions we're interested in finding. So as t goes to infinity, what happens is I need to sit at xf longer and longer and longer. And basically, I get into the situation as t goes to infinity, the only way to make a solution that lasts infinitely long is to sit here at the top of the potential for a really long time. And in this case, I basically have conservation of energy. Okay, so the types of trajectories I'm looking for are the trajectories that go back and forth but remain at constant energy. So as t goes to infinity, the solutions have E, which we're going to define as this Euclidean energy. So this is dx d tau squared minus V is some constant. And we can always choose that constant to be 0 because I always have the freedom to define my 0 of energy. So again, the Euclidean part comes in this definition of the energy by taking V to minus V. And I can use that to solve for dx d tau. This is just square root of 2V. And I can put that back into my definition for the Euclidean action around x bar. So this Euclidean action evaluated at x bar is just equal to an integral instead of over tau, I can change variables and I can go to square root 2v. So that came by substituting in the original definition of the action, dx d tau is just square root 2v. And then using one of the dx d taus to change from x to tau, or vice versa. OK, so this is the Euclidean action of that type of solution. And the size of this solution, so remember in the limit where t goes to infinity, this thing just sits for a really long time and has a bump. This size can basically be estimated as 1 divided by the square root of the derivative, the second derivative evaluated at the top. So imagine this was like a pendulum. There's a certain period in this upside down well. Okay, that's just given by the second derivative at the bottom, basically. So I sit here for a really long time in t, and then I undergo this one oscillation. And so what that means is that there's a whole family of solutions that are all basically approximate solutions. Move over here. So because I'm taking this limit where big T goes to infinity, I can imagine stringing together a whole bunch of these. And that path will also connect XF to XF. So the total action of n of these guys is just n times the action of 1. So Sn is just n times the Euclidean action for 1. And further, if I look at the other piece which I need, which is that determinant, so this product of lambda n to the minus 1/2, then this is going to be the same as the simple harmonic oscillator, except at the jumps, right? Because I sit here for a really long time at the top of this hill, and then I make this jump. I sit here for a really long time, and then I make this jump. So we could write this as the answer we got for the simple harmonic oscillator, which was omega over pi h bar to the 1/2 e to the minus omega t over 2 times some correction factor. So this is a fudge factor, which we're going to leave just as a fudge factor for now, so that we can write this full determinant as thing we know times something we can solve for. Okay. So any questions at the moment? We're almost at the end. We're almost at the answer. So another way of writing this, which you'll see, this product of eigenvalues is sometimes written as a functional determinant. Okay, so this is shorthand for solve the eigenvalue problem and figure out what this product of eigenvalues are.
So what is the potential we're using here?
So we're keeping it general, but we'd like to look at a class of potentials that had this this property where there was some stable minimum and then some sort of runaway or other place that we have free particle states. So you can use this method to solve for anything. Next class, we're going to look at a very particular example. Which maybe will give you a little bit better idea. But at the moment, we're trying to solve this general problem where I have some stable state, metastable state, and then these continuum states out here. Okay. So that's good. And in fact, if I string together n of these, then let's just define this correction factor to be the correction factor for 1 and raise it to the nth power. This is just my definition. There's nothing deep there. Okay. So I've got this string of beads, and I can vary their position. So I can have a path that sits approximately near the top for some amount of time, then goes, or it can sit for a different amount of time and then go. So I need to integrate over the position of these n centers. And that roughly is going to give me a factor of t to the n over n factorial, because they're all indistinguishable. Okay. So I just look at all the possible positions. I can put this string of beads and divide by all the indistinguishable configurations. Okay. So that's the n factorial. And now we can write the answer. So let's do that, and then we can maybe ask some questions and unpack it a little bit, because that was a bit technical. So this propagator is going to be equal to this harmonic oscillator piece, which came from the product of eigenvalues to the 1/2 e to the minus omega t over 2. Okay, so that came from this piece. And then I need to do a sum over all possible numbers of jumps, okay, this is summing over all the possible paths, I've got this correction factor. I've got this factor of t, which came from having to basically integrate over all these possible centers. I've got the action for n of these single jumps. And then I've got an n factorial. And so now you can see why I made this definition, because this sum is just the exponential, right? It's just the exponential series. So in the end, this is just a product of two exponentials, kt and that's the formal answer for the propagator.
Yeah. In the last explanation, do we have n s or just s?
Thanks. Yeah, that's just s. Yeah, that's important. Okay, very good. So that's the answer for the propagator. And now we know we can just read off the ground state energy just the same way we did for the simple harmonic oscillator. So this should be proportional to e to the minus h naught t over h bar, which means I can just solve for e naught. E naught is 1/2 h bar omega, that came from this piece. That was just the same as we did for the harmonic oscillator. But now we have this correction, which is h bar k e to the minus s naught se, excuse me. That can be written clearer. Okay, so this is our correction to the ground state energy. And h bar omega is certainly real. So the only place that I could possibly have an imaginary contribution is in here. Okay, it has to be in k. So gamma, which was 2 times the imaginary part of e naught, is going to be 2 times the imaginary part of k, h bar e to the minus s over h bar. So we're almost done, but we need to know what k is. And we need to know if it's imaginary. So let's do that. I think this board will minimize my erasing. Okay, so we need to solve for k. And to do so, let's return to this eigenvalue problem. Okay, because k is related to that determinant up there. That was where we put the fudge factor in. So we have this equation, negative d squared xn d tau squared plus d double prime evaluated at x bar times xn equals lambda n xn. Okay? And there is a solution to this equation, which is a zero mode. That is, lambda, we'll call it lambda 1, equals 0. So there's one eigenvalue that's 0. And that's easy to see. This is just x1 equals a mysterious factor of this Euclidean action for one particle to the minus 1/2, we'll get to that in a second, times dx bar d tau, okay? So it's basically the derivative, it's proportional to the derivative of our classical path with respect to tau. And we can see that just by shoving that in to this equation of motion. Okay, so putting that in, we're going to get the third derivative of x bar with respect to tau, negative, plus b double prime of x bar times dx bar d tau equals zero, if there is in fact such a zero eigenvalue. And this you'll recognize as just the tau derivative of d squared x bar d tau squared plus v prime of x bar times, just that. Okay, and this, of course, is the equation of motion for the classical path. So that's zero. In fact, that is zero. So check. We've identified this zero mode. Now, this S naught to the minus 1/2 business, SE, should always stick with the notation in your notes. It will cause you endless confusion. But anyway, SE, comes from demanding that this integral from negative t over 2 to t over 2 d tau of x1 squared equals 1. Okay, that's just the normality condition of my xn's. And the fact that negative this integral from negative t over 2 to t over 2 of x bar dot squared equals, this is really another way of writing this integral from xf to x star dx square root 2v. And this is just equal to this action. Okay. So using these two relations, you can solve for the prefactor in front of x1. Okay, it has to be se to the minus 1/2. And this this solution, this zero mode, corresponds to a translation. So x1 is basically a translation of x bar. So let's say I looked at the change in x that was induced by just x bar plus c1 x1. If I just looked at this first term in this expansion, then delta x would just be x1, which is dx bar dt delta t, right? So this just corresponds to a delta, a translation in tau. So I can look at this. Another way of writing this translation is delta x equals x1 times adding some piece, c1, okay, some coefficient. And in this way, I can identify one of these integrals in the path integral as just an integral over the different centers. So if I take one of these instantons or one of these bounces, C1 actually corresponds to moving that around, just moving the center. Okay, and I can figure out the Jacobian just using the fact that, well, we know what the normalization of x1 is. That's where this factor of s0 to the half came from. Yeah. And in fact, if you look at our answer, we had this one step where we keenly guessed that we needed to integrate over all these possible centers. And so in k, we should in fact include a factor of s0 to the 1 half over 2 pi h bar. And that'll take care of that part. So k has got to be proportional to this s0 over 2 pi h bar to the 1 half. OK, we're almost at the answer. So if I look at x bar as a function of tau, again, it looks something like this. So that means that x1, which is just the derivative of x bar with respect to tau, looks something like this. So the derivative starts out positive, goes through 0, and then gets negative. Okay, so this eigenfunction has a node. And experience with quantum mechanics would tell you that there's always a nodeless eigenfunction of the Schrodinger equation, typically, right? So if there's a function with one node, there's a function with zero nodes. And that eigenfunction typically has lower energy. Okay. In this case, though, we already are at zero. Okay, so the existence of this wave function with a node implies the existence of another wave function we'll call it lambda 0, which is less than 0, where this eigenfunction would look something like that. So that means that there has to be this negative eigenvalue, OK? And that means that lambda 0 to the minus 1 half power is imaginary, okay? And that's going to imply that k is imaginary. It's going to have an imaginary piece. So let's unpack that now, and that will be the result for the day. So if I look at this propagator again, let's just put all the pieces together. So one way of writing this is just the one instanton piece in the sum. So if I just look at the n equals 1 term in that sum that we wrote down over there, one way of writing it is this normalization factor. We can perform this integral over C1 to get a factor of t. And I can stick in a factor of I because the zero mode exists. So there's this this negative eigen mode. And then I can use this notation where I write that product of eigenvalues. In this case, I'm taking the absolute magnitude of that product of eigenvalues. So I've got an I that came from the negative mode. And this prime means don't include lambda 1, which was that zero mode, the translation, because I've already stuck it here in T. And then I've got the action for one of these guys over h bar. And of course, I've got a factor of s naught over 2 pi h bar to the half. Okay. That should have gone with t. Okay, and this we're saying is equal to what we had over there with our fudge factor. So we want to set this equal to our n. And we can write what I had over there as this. So this guy is just shorthand notation for our omega over pi h bar to the 1/2 e to the omega t over 2. And now I can compare these two things and solve for what the fudge factor k had to be. So these imply that k has to be equal to I times s naught over 2 pi h bar to the 1/2 times the ratio of these determinants. Okay. And so k is imaginary, and therefore this amplitude is not zero. Okay. So this amplitude is given by, now we have, so we've got this s naught over 2 pi h bar to the 1/2 times the factor of h bar we had over there times this ratio of determinants times e to the minus the Euclidean action of one solution over h bar. So that's the formal answer. Okay. So that went a bit quick. Let me just summarize the main points. Okay. So we basically have an expression for this rate, which is the product of the fluctuations around the classical path that was parametrized by this functional determinant times the exponential of minus the action of the classical path. Okay. So that piece came from considering the second order variations in the action over the classical path, and then the e to the minus s came from the classical path itself. So the other important parts along the way, so we had this integral over t, which had to do with putting the centers at arbitrary positions. Okay. And that was an eigenfunction which had zero eigenvalue, which implied the existence of another eigenfunction with negative eigenvalue, which was key because that made this fudge factor imaginary, okay? Because that made this functional determinant imaginary. And only when I have an imaginary piece do I get a non-zero decay rate. So this is what one would actually sit down and use to compute the decay rate of a particle fixed here in this potential well off to infinity. So so are there any questions about that? Yeah?
I didn't really understand how you saw that x1 was a translation.
So that just came from if I look at x bar plus some constant x1, yeah, where x1 is just dx d tau, then the effect of that delta x, so if I add that x bar minus x bar plus c1 x1 effectively would be delta x, and that's just this x1, which is a derivative times delta t. So is that?
That's only an infinitesimal notation.
Yeah, so you can define it in this infinitesimal way, but one I could have also just written x bar plus c1 x1 minus x bar is c1 x1, where this is now dx bar dt. Yeah, okay, that doesn't really make any sense. I think it's okay that it's just infinitesimal because we're only considering this Taylor expansion around the classical path.
So you mean we have a generator of translations?
Yeah, we certainly have a generator of translations there, that's right. But then going from the infinitesimal to the full thing would require exponentiating that, and I guess that's where I'm, yeah. That's the short. Any other questions? Yeah?
I'm not exactly sure I'm safe on these determinants of the ratio of properties. So if we define them as just the product of all eigenvalues, so I guess the prime should be on the above determinant, on the below one. Wouldn't it then mean that all of them cancel with except of the zero mode, and then wouldn't we just have 1 over 0?
No, so that doesn't quite work out that way, because this is really the functional determinant for the exact harmonic oscillator problem. Okay. Whereas this one is for this potential you have.
I'm blind. Sorry.
So that's definitely anharmonic, and it's going to have different eigenfunctions and eigenvalues. Yeah.
But can we be sure that the ratio will be finite?
That's a great question. So this, in general, is difficult to evaluate. You need to have a particular example in mind.
But here?
I think, what's that?
Yeah, so here.
So here we did this for an arbitrary potential. And this ratio will be finite as long as all of the eigenvalues of this guy are positive, which, since we've already taken care of the zero mode, we can basically be assured of that. And it's also key that there's just one negative mode. So as long as there's one zero mode and one negative mode, then all the other eigenvalues are going to be positive, and this ratio is going to be just fine.
But couldn't it be that the asymptotic behavior is different from, so that it does?
Oh, so you're worried that the product of an infinite number of these eigenvalues is going to diverge?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know of such a proof, although it might exist. It's certainly expected to be finite, but I think I can't think of a good proof of that on the spot. But I can definitely look into that.
But usually, the models we will use, there it's finite.
Yeah. In any case, anyone has ever calculated, it's finite, which is a good thing, because otherwise, all the atomic nuclei in our body would decay instantaneously. Yeah, this is really a rate for an unstable atom, say. So it had better be finite, or we're in trouble. Okay, great. So tomorrow we're going to do this in field theory, and then we're going to learn how this same formalism basically can be used, ported over directly, to calculate the decay rate of the vacuum, say, in this room. This is some bubble that would then eat us up. Okay, see you tomorrow.